Space Cowboy Books presents Simultaneous Times, a science and speculative fiction podcast. Short stories to stir the imagination by contemporary authors.
Carl by Joe Hertel. Read by the author. Music by Luke Poole.
Carl. My name is Carl. I'm not special. I'm not handsome. I'm not athletic, and I have no ability or desire to entertain. I like to clean. I like things neat. I don't want to be noticed. I'm just me, and I'm content. Early in 2048, I accepted my life's calling by beginning my janitorial career at the newly opened Grand Retirement Depot. The GRD would be my responsibility for the next 40 years, but on my first day, I didn't know that. It was January when I first started, and the first retirement would be in 6 months. By 2028, the citizens had grown tired of the absolute corruption of politicians. A network of higher learning organizations had concluded that the most stalwart and honest individual was corrupted by becoming a politician. Therefore, the people, in an amazing feat of cooperation, demonstrated that the power to govern belonged to them and not the politicians. They were able to peacefully bring about new term limit laws. All federally elected politicians were required to deacquisition all earthly goods and attachments. Just deciding to become a politician was a tremendous sacrifice. Yet the rewards for serving the country still attracted more candidates than could be accepted. Marriages were dissolved, assets were provided to offspring for education, anything left over was transferred to the IRS to alleviate the common person's tax burden. Once a person entered federal political service, they could not be returned to the general population, as they would then, in turn, corrupt the people around them. An absolute term limit of 12 years service was established, and at retirement, the outgoing politicians were placed in the stasis chambers, loaded into a rocket, and launched to Ariel, a moon of Uranus. The journey would take 9 years, but the retired politicians wouldn't age, and utopia awaits. A series of spaceships had been launched in 2035 to terraform and colonize the retirement planet, which would be ready for the first force of retirements in 2057. Plenty of videos showed the caretakers of the new retirement planet gracefully supplying a vacation environment where all the retirees would be content and happy for the remainder of their lives. The GRD had, at its center, a rocket launching pad to launch retiring politicians into space. These were wasted rockets, as they only went one way. No recycling of vehicles from this public service spectacle. There was space for hundreds of thousands of people to view the launches. Family, friends, and admirers could all watch the final moments on this planet of their former loved ones. The politicians themselves recorded an up to 30-second message that would be played before launch. As part of my duties, I was the one to push the launch button, and I always regretted my actions. But the people are the power, and the forced retirement was to maintain that power. I've been pushing the button for 40 years now, usually twice a year, but sometimes more. Today is my last day, and I'll be glad to never return. Today I turn over the button to my replacement. Today I will remove the launch sign that I replaced 39 years ago. 39 years ago I covered the original label. 39 years ago I wasn't hired as a janitor. I was hired as an executioner. And my replacement will see the original label of incinerate.
Rayto by D. Keith Howington. Read by Derek Lindsay. Music by Dane Liscombe.
Tok pulled the offered bulb toward himself with an off arm, using the moment of social graces to stall for time before answering. The receiving room, with its many openings and artificial lighting and dense live coral decorations, was off-putting in its opulence. Why should I place myself in danger for you? Epp's forearms curled under, but Tok thought his surprise was feigned. Nonsense, old friend, Epp said, the symbols and colors of his words measured and calm. The dangerous part is long past. What remains is a puzzle. That is what you contribute, after all. Well, One mystery, his being brought in, seemed resolved. Tok tilted forward, raised up on his arm tips, and adopted an accusing tone of Orange. My sire put you up to this, did he not? His out-city accent of blue tinges was under control for the moment. Benja is 2 or 3 night cycles from senescence. Epp's symbols were slow and patient, but he had a telling amount of skin involved. I'm sure Benja has important things to do. Tok noted the non-answer. Drat and dry, the old meddler. Tok had no intention of spending his 8th of days knotted up in some study warren, doing meaningless work for the community. Let someone else sort shells or sift sand. But he said nothing, visibly, showing only gray. Epp would have to break the silence. Flickered Epp for a moment, and he snagged an urchin bulb from the array above and took a thoughtful bite. Then, all right, there is another aspect. There is a murder. Tok's answer was edged with black dots of anger and blue tinges. Why is this my problem? And who is it? Epp answered only the second question. Rato of Tip Green Tribe. White laughter erupted. You cannot think I grieve for him. Oh, in case you're wondering, I swear on my breeding arm it was not me. Epp looked startled. Ah, no. But we thought you might... Then he faded off. Look at the evidence. Work your little puzzle. I would not lift a back arm to help him. Tok paused, his curiosity hooked in spite of himself. He chewed another bite while continuing. Still, I suppose it does not help my old enemy who is now beyond this world. I will see the evidence. The evidence itself is beyond this world. What do you mean? Epp lowered slightly on his arms. The murder took place above. The alien world floor was uneven, bizarre, densely covered in unexplainable life forms, and too bright. Unguessable lumps and protrusions were apparent everywhere, and many of these protrusions reached up 8/8 of spans or more towards the fierce sun. Nothing seemed to be moving, but a closer look showed an oscillation of the dense living coating on nearly everything in sight. The green shark-tooth-like shapes, somehow alive in the near vacuum of this world, managed to be moving as if jostled by currents. The atmosphere here was a tiny fraction of normal, some 1/8 cubed of it by weight. That these tooth shapes were coated in unchanging greens of irony and jest only added to the strangeness. There was no communication here. Nothing could explain itself in words, but seemed to shout nonetheless. Tok turned his attention inside. The darkened slits in the vehicle were not sufficient to protect his sensitive eyes. Who could get used to such glare? The pilot above him operated controls, and the strange contraption Epp's team had built began to move again. The motion was unsettling, ungainly, staggering like an injured crab. Surely nothing could swim in the thin vapor. It offered no resistance to their passage at all. Tok noted he could view objects many 8 squared away, and he did some mental calculations of angles. He was seeing projections many city widths away. Well, they would see predators coming if the world had such, but this openness was unnerving. Secondary currents inside the vehicle jostled him back and forth. He found himself occupying 5 arms holding his position in the low-slung crab walker craft. Pilot was apparently adept at this, and used only 3 to steady himself, while the rest worked controls. The view tilted back and forth. It was hard to watch. He remained still while the entire world swam erratically. Tok touched a comm plate and spoke towards its eye. What is our destination? After a moment, the plate surface changed, forming Epp's slow symbols and muted colors. One of those mounds is coated with life, but is itself non-living, just to the right. We are going there. Tok pondered for a moment. Is it the skeletons of the life forms? No, it is nothing like home at all. It is created of worked rock and worked metal and is wholly unnatural. Well, we do that. Your own home is worked rock. And far too rich for my taste, Tok thought, but did not say. This is different. You will see. After the better part of a day, the two clumsy craft reached an opening that had apparently been made by the previous efforts of their kind. It was recent, and the green life forms were not in evidence at its edges, other than a crushed, melancholy green coating on the floor showing the passage of many such vehicles. The bright sunlight was waning, but still intense. Tok quite happily passed out of its rays into the cooler, artificial light which had been set up inside. A tunnel bored down, and ever downward they went. Finally, the smooth bore leveled out into a different pattern. In the lights that had been placed, badly damaged but clearly artificial shapes were evident everywhere. This cavern was as jarringly regular as segments of a plinto worm, and each surface met at unhappy angles. Almost nothing curved was in sight other than piles of debris that formed heaps at various places. Time had erased any colors or markings it might have had. He touched the comm. When did we build this?
We did not.
This is built. It did not grow, surely.
No, it was indeed built. We think that this structure survived by fortune, buried in some calamity.
Then who did?
The complate remained blank for a moment, then. We do not know, but it was an extraordinarily long time ago.
Tell me what you know then, Tok said, impatient with Epp's ponderous colorings.
We discovered this place some 40 cycles ago. The life forms change radically every 12 or 13 cycles, and the atmosphere changes. The life dies off almost completely, then somehow returns. We know very little about the larval forms, and the little swimmers associated with the green organisms are of another class of life. I have 30 cycles, most of my life on this project, and is my contribution to determine the age of this series of chambers. All the techniques at my disposal have been used trying to place dates on this structure. It is difficult for various reasons. Epp paused. Then, this place is old. It is older than we are.
Oh, surely, Tok replied, but appears to be older than several generations of us.
You misunderstand me. It is older than we are, our race. When this creation came to be, your ancestors and mine were unthinking brutes. Tok Greenback.
Well, you know my sire, but his forearms were curled tight. If you remembered his biology, their race had arisen from their dumb cousins over more than a 64th of the age of the planet. He was shocked to his tips. After a moment, the complate spoke.
Let us continue.
The pilot above did his ritual, and the rocking motion began anew. By now, Tok was thinking of it as almost natural, like the motion of a tide pool he had seen as an infant. Certainly natural in comparison to this place. Onward they went, passing through openings more or less regular, as well as many that were born of age and collapse. Where was Reto killed? Tok asked, remembering the events that had brought him here.
In the next chamber, in fact. It is about as far as we have gone.
Through one last opening, again barely large enough to admit the width of his low crass legs, was another vehicle like his own, but overturned. Tok instinctively slid up the wall of his own chamber so that the vehicle appeared upright in his view. The scene chilled him. Unplanned death was rare, and violent death even more so. The life space is broken. The atmosphere has fled into the vacuum, Tok said, more calmly than he felt.
Yes, it is not truly a vacuum, but that is essentially correct.
Can this happen to us? Tok blurted. The embarrassing blue accent was suddenly pronounced.
No, Epp replied. We are safe enough. But even Epp's patient colors showed agitation.
How much have you learned of Reto's end? Damaged craft was morbidly fascinating and repellent at the same time. Epp's answer was tinged with embarrassment. We did not disturb the craft since we found it yesterday. We did not want to disturb the area, and the few who know of our work up here are not suited for funeral processing. Well, I certainly am not, talk blued out at the screen. No, of course, said Epp gently. But you have made a career of figuring things out. It would have suited you to our work, Epp added absently. You know that this was the person who kept that career from providing me a decent living. I just recalled that. An uncomfortable grayness followed. Well, let us learn what we can then, Tok said. First, the scene. These craft make tracks like lobsters in a parade. It seems that Rado has been beyond this chamber. Look at the chamber bottom behind you. Yes, we will go that way soon enough. Tok spoke carefully, keeping tight hold of his accent. I will go now and see what lies beyond. Can you examine any notes Rado might have left? Com flickered for several seconds. I will look. Tok signaled the pilot. The craft turned and moved quickly toward the far end. The pilot, too, seemed strongly desirous of being out of that chamber. The next room was similar. Lobster tracks went across to the far opening. Into that chamber carefully, this room was much larger. Tok sensed a difference before he saw it. Near a corner, eighths of spans away, another tunnel angled up toward the world floor above. Tok asked the pilot to move in that direction. The tracks he saw there were more confused here. This tunnel was larger, and some bright object of fresh-worked metal lay at its base. Then his other eye caught the comm plate. Red pulsing agony wailed from the comm. The pilot was already turning the craft. Tok silenced the plate with three arms. He could not think with those colors. Back in Rado's room, Tok saw Epp's craft crouched near the wrecked shell, a mechanical jointed arm extending into the cabin of his fallen enemy. Epp's window slots were opaque. It took a full minute of urging to get the pilot to move closer. Tok would not have been able to do so at all if he were not demanding performance from a subservient. Finally, they could see into the cabin, where the vehicle's comm plate was pulsing with a recording of Rato's hated, violent-tinged accent, shaded with pain. Tok was disturbed enough by the scene, then more so by the voice. So, please contact the Council of Tip Green and your own clans. I cannot continue. I am too badly damaged and face my end. I fear you will soon. The builders who left long ago have returned. Ancient instincts overcame Tok, and his cabin filled with ink.
In this episode of Simultaneous Times, you heard Carl by Joe Hertel, with music by Luke Poole. Rato by D. Keith Howington, with music by Dane Luscombe. Theme music by Dane Luscombe as well. Be sure to visit us at www.spacecowboybooks.com.